Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Beitza Daf Yudalu, beginning at the new Mishnah, four lines from the top, Yudalu Ramad Aleph. We're learning today, Le'ilu Nishmas, Giza Myers, Gittel Bas Hirsch Mordechai. All the Nishons we learned for should have an Aliyah. I'm dictating this share on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Yezus Hashem, I wish everybody a good Gebench Dior, a Kesiva V'chasima Tova, Mitz Hashem, we should be Zocha to learn together the Daf for many, many, many cycles to come still, and Yezus Hashem, we should be Zocha to a good, happy, healthy, safe year. Okay, we begin the Mishnah, Yudalit Omer Aleph, four lines at the top. Veishamai Yomri, and Veishamai tells us, Tavlin, spices, Nidochin, you're allowed to go and chop them up on Yontif, B'modoch shel Eitz, using a chopper, what we call a pestle that is made out of wood. But Veishamai says you can't use the normal chopper, which would be a chopper that's made out of stone. As Rashi points out, this moduch, this pestle, is a buchna, known as a pestle, a chopper. Shemakim bo kidarko, vein tzorech shinui, it says on the side, el shinui zuta. You have to make a little bit of a change in the normal way that you chop. So you can't use a stone pestle, but you're allowed to go over here use a wooden pestle. That's for spices, according to Beis Shammai. But for salt, v'amelach, to chop up salt, bepach, that you have to use only a pach. A pach is like a container, a jug, that is made out of earthenware, usually a kli cheres, but you can't use a regular chopper, you can't use a regular mortar, because, as we'll see, salt is something that you are not going to lose its strength by chopping it erev yontif. And therefore, even though you now need it on yontif, and ochel nefesh was permissible, so the rabbi said, don't go and chop with even a normal utensil in an abnormal way. You have to use something totally a shinui, because you should have prepared this beforehand. As Rashi points out, the melech boy shinui, you have to do a real shinui with melech, as opposed to Beis Shammai says, with a tavlin, you just have to do a minor shinui, shinui zuta, as it says in the Masoreh Sashas. That's the opinion of Beis Shammai. In addition, Beis Shammai says, if you wanted to chop up the salt, if you didn't want to use this pach, like a kli cheres, you could use be'etz haporer, or you could use a wooden ladle. Rashi says, etz porer is kaf gedola, a ladle. And this would be perfectly fine, because you just have to use a shinui for salt, and any type of a shinui, either using a kli cheres like the pach, or the ladle, the kaf, like this etz porer, would be fine. That's Beis Shammai's opinion. Again, tavlin, a little shinui, salt, a big shinui. No, tavlin nidochin kedarkin. For tavlin, you don't have to make any shinui whatsoever, because tavlin don't taste good if they're a day old. They have to be fresh. So therefore, you're allowed to do this, and there's no concern that you'll do it for a long period of time. If you use your regular utensils, you just do enough for yontif. And therefore, you can use the regular utensil, which is the modal shel evan, which is a stone pestle. However, salt, which again, you should have prepared it beforehand. You technically could prepare the salt beforehand. It doesn't lose its potency by being ground up the day before, so therefore, hamelach, you should use modoch shalet. That you should use some sort of a shinui. Instead of using the stone pestle, use a wooden pestle. Okay, that's the way we have the machlokas here between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So the Gemara says, the kuli yama miyas, what do you bottom line see? Melech boy shinui, both according to Beis Shammai and according to Beis Hillel, melech requires a shinui. Beis Shammai says it's a large shinui, and Beis Hillel says it's a smaller shinui. But both agree that it needs a shinui. My timer, how come salt needs a shinui? So we have two reasons. I already alluded to one of them. We have two reasons over here. Rufuna Ruchista. We don't know which one said which. Chadamar, kolakderus, kulan, srichos, melach. One of them said because everything requires salt. So therefore, you should have known that you're going to need salt beforehand. So it's not a surprise. As opposed to, ein kolakderus, srichos, tablet. Not every dish requires spices to be put into it. So you could be surprised and say, gee, I didn't realize I would need spices. But salt, you can't say that. Every dish requires salt, so therefore it's not a surprise, and you should have prepared it before, and that's why it needs a shinui, according to both Beis Shammai and even Beis Hillel. The other opinion, either Rufuna Ruchista v'Chadamar, kol hatadlin mefigin taman, that spices lose their potency if they're left chopped for a while. So therefore, you want to have it nice and fresh, so you want to chop it that same day. But salt, umelach, ain't a mefigin taman. Salt doesn't lose its potency. If you take salt from a week ago, it's just as good as the salt that you grind and chop right now. Is there a nafkamina between the two? Might be not. What's the difference between these two reasonings of Rav Huna and Ruchista? Are there any scenarios that show you a practical nafkamina? So Mor says, yeah, ikabinai, there are two. The first one is the yoda that you know, what you're cooking. You plan out your menu, and you know that you're going to need something that definitely needs spices. So therefore, since you knew you were going to need spices, you should have made it beforehand. So according to the opinion, it says, ain't called kederos trichos tavlin. So here, this kederos do need tavlin, so you should have done it beforehand. But according to the idea that kol tavlin mefigin taman, that it's going to lose their potency, so even though you know that you're going to need it, but it's going to lose its potency if you do it before yontif, so you'd still be allowed to do it according to that reason, kol tavlin mefigin taman, that reason you could do it on yontif, but according to the reason that you don't know that you're going to need it, well, here you do know you're going to need it, so you wouldn't be allowed to do it on yontif in the regular way. That's nafkamina number one. Alternatively, nafkamina number two, inami, if you're dealing with saffron, bimorika, saffron is known as karkom. So karkom is something that isn't mefigin taman. It will last for a while. So you could have done it erev yontif. So if you know you're going to need a dish that is going to require this karkom, this saffron, so then, according to Man D'Yomar, that it loses its strength, so then, whoa, you should have done it erev yontif. But if you're saying you don't know whether you're going to need the saffron or not, so then, now, according to that opinion, you'd be allowed to do it on Yom Tov because you didn't know that you're going to need saffron tomorrow. How do we paskin? Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Kol HaNidochin, Nidochin Kedarkin, Vafilu Melach. Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says something that seems to go against both Beishama and Beisala from our Mishnah. Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, now they're in Amora, how can they go against our Mishnah? They say that any time you need to pound spices, whether they're regular tavlin or even salt, had to gomer to do this on Yom Tov. Now, that goes against the opinion of even Beisala, the most makel opinion in our Mishnah. Where it says, wait a second, well, Amris Melach Boye Shinoi. We just said that salt requires a Shinoi, a great Shinoi according to Beis Shammai, but a minor Shinoi even according to Beis Hillel. So how can you tell me that Afilu Melach doesn't require Shinoi, Nidochin Kedarkin? So Gemara says, because Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel has a third opinion that they go like, Hu D'Amar Ki Hai Tana, Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel goes like this Brisa, the Tana in this Brisa, the Tanya. This Brisa says as follows, Amar Rav Meir. Rav Meir says that there's another opinion of Beis Hillel, not the opinion that we had in our Mishnah. But he says, Lo nechluku beishame beisilil ala nidochin, she nidochin kedarkin, umelach imoyen. Rav Meir says that there is no machlokis between beishame and beisilil. When you have to go and chop spices, so once you're ready chopping spices, you can even chop salt with them. Melach imoyen, that's perfectly allowed. Where do beishame and beisilil have a machlokis? Lo nechluku elil adocha bifne atzman. If you're dealing with chopping salt by itself, that's what Beishamai says, Beishamai Omrim, Melach Bipach Ubi'etz Apar. For salt, you have to use a minimal amount of a shinoi, either using the pach, which is the kli cheres, or the eitz, which is like a kaf, a ladle. You have to do a shinoi. And likewise, litzoli, you're only allowed to go do it for a small amount of salt, the amount that you would normally use for roasting. For cooking, you use a larger amount of salt. So Beis Shammai only allows you to use these shinoi different mechanisms of either the klicheris or the wooden ladle, and you're only allowed to use for a small amount of salt, lutzli, but not for kedera, not the amount that you normally need for cooking. Beis Hillel says you can use anything to chop with. The more questions that says, what? Bechol dover sokadaitach? Are you allowed to use anything? As Rashi says, are you telling me you're allowed to use something that is also to use? Afilu Dovor, Rashi says, she'ein nito b'shabes, you can take something muktzah? You're allowed to go and take a muktzah item and go chop with that? So yeah, that's not what the Gemara means. The Gemara says, Ela ema lichol dovor. You'd be allowed to go and chop as much salt as you need, even for cooking purposes. In other words, even for something that requires a lot of salt. As Rashi says, afilu k'deira. And therefore, you can do this in the normal way. According to Rav Meir, Beis Hillel's opinion is exactly like Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Paskin. Kol ha-nidochin, nidochin k'darkin, afilu melach. That opinion is a Tanoic opinion of Rav Meir according to Beis Hillel. Therefore, there's no problem that the Amora reviewed Amar Shmuel seems to be going against our Mishnah's understanding of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, which is not the same understanding as Rav Meir's understanding of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. The Gemara continues and says, Amalei Rav Acha Bardala Livrei. That's the Gersa that we have. Rav Acha Bardala said to his son. However, the Bach in Os Aleph says that it really should be Amalei Rav L'Rav Acha Bardala. The Rav was the one that told Rav Acha Bardala. Ki dayachis, when you're going and actually chopping up the salt, when you're pounding the salt, grinding up the salt, atzli atzluye vidoch. Go and tilt it a little bit. Atzluye means to tilt it. Hate, Rashi says, hameducha. Go and tilt this pestle in a way that it's not chopping on the bottom, but it's chopping a little bit on the side. Altsida. Why? Because disavar kishmuel. This opinion that either Rav said to Rav Acha Bardala or the Rav Acha Bardala said to his son is the Amar Nidochis Kedarka B'Modoch, that technically you're allowed to go chop the salt any way you want, like the lenient opinion that Rav Amar Shmuel just said, like Rav Meir's opinion of Beis Hillel, and you can use a Modoch Shel Evan, even a stone Evan, a stone pestle. However, Umihu Shinui Zuta Boy L'Shanuye. But he says that you should make some little shinui just to remind yourself that it is Yontif and you shouldn't chop absolutely in the normal way. That's what Rav Acha Bardla said to his son, or that Rav Rab said to Rav Acha Bardla. Maisa Shaya. Rav Sheish says, Shoma kol buchna. Rav Sheish has heard the sound of a pounding of a buchna of this even, this stone pestle. Now, he holds, like Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, that you're allowed to go chop salt, but he also holds, like Rav Acha Bardla said to his son, or that Rav said to Rav Acha Bardla, that you should make a little bit of a shinoi. Now, I would point out, Rav Sheshes is blind, and I'm assuming that he has hyper-acute hearing, because many blind people, they improve their other senses, so they're very, very good, let's say, at hearing. So Rav Sheshes, as we'll see in the story, was able to distinguish sounds very, very well. So Rav Sheshes heard them pounding with this buchna, which is this stone pestle. And he commented, and he said, Omar, Hailav migave deve soyhu. This ain't coming from my house. Because in my house, I don't let them use the stone pestle in the normal way. I make them do it on a slant. And I can tell that this sound is not a stone pestle being used in a slant. It's used in the normal way, and therefore it can't be from my house, because I'm machmir, like this position that we just said regarding Rav Acha Bardla. Ayyimor says, V'dumo atzluy atzlay. How do you know? He weren't holding it on a slant. So he says, now I could tell the difference. The shame dahavat solu kale. I could tell that it was too clear. Again, I'm pointing out that Rav Sheshes had acute hearing. So therefore, he was able to tell. Because he was blind, he must have had acute hearing. And he could say, no, I can guarantee you there was no tilting of this pestle that was being pounded in the normal way. No, v'dilma tavlin abu. How do you know it was salt? Maybe it was tavlin. And tavlin, this opinion says you'll have to do it in the normal way. So again, his acute hearing. Tavlin, nabuche minabach kalayu. The tavlin, I can tell the difference between chopping tavlin and chopping salt. As Rashi says, kishen mishabrin hagarinim, when you're chopping up the grains of the spices, the seeds inside, nishma kolo bimeducha kiminavchem. It sounds more like a certain type of pounding sound, a certain sound, and this wasn't the sound that I heard, so I could tell it wasn't spices that they were chopping, but it was salt. Mark continues and says, Tana Rabban, we learned in the following braisa, Enos in Tisni. Tisni is a certain type of grain that is chopped up into four quarters. It's chopped up into smaller pieces. And this is, Rashi says, on Yontif, a Torah Godol to do this. So therefore, this braisa tells us, Enos in Tisni. You're not allowed to make Tisni on Yontif. It's a Tircha Yesera, too much Tircha, and you shouldn't do this. And then it says, Vein Kochin b'machteshes. But you're not allowed to chop in a machteshes. Now, when we said you can't make the tisni, that implies that you are allowed to go and make other types of grain chopped up, for example, chilka and daisa, various other types of grains to chop up into larger pieces is allowed. So when it says enos in tisni, it means you can't make tisni, but you can make the chilka and daisa. But then it says ein kochim lachteshes, that implies that you can't even chop up the chilka and daisa. So Gemara says, tarti, you have two seemingly contradictory rules. As Rashi says, shnei dvarim yesh kan. And lo zeh, don lo zeh. They seem to be contradictory. Ktani, enos in tisni. You tell me you're not allowed to make tisni. That implies ho chilka v'daisa shapa dami. You are allowed to make them. They ain't tachinu merubat, because it's not so difficult to do this. But then you say, v'odetani, ain't kochin klal, which means you can't even make the chilka and daisi. So which one is it? So the Gemara says, hochi kamar. This is what this Raisa was telling us, this Tanu Rabbanan over here, when it said, Enos in Tisni, Vein Kochin Machteshes, the two are related. It's not two separate statements. It's Matam Enos in Tisni. Why can't you make Tisni? Because Lefish Ein Kochin Machteshes, because you're not allowed to use a Machteshes, because the Tisni would be made in a Machteshes. But the Chuk and Daisa, they can be made in something that's not a Machteshes. But Gemara says, so then why don't you just stay straight out in this Raisa? Lemo Ein Kochin Machteshes. Just say you're not allowed to use chopping in a Machteshes, which is a large type of a container. So why didn't you just say that? So Gemara says, no, itoni ain't kochim b'machteshes. If it had just said that, you know what I would have said? Hava mina. I would have said, hani mili b'machteshes gedola. That means you can't use a machteshes gedola. However, avu b'machteshes ketana, in a smaller machteshes, emu shapadami. I would have said you're perfectly allowed to go and chop up the tisni in a smaller container. Therefore, kamash b'lan, that's the chiddush over here, that you can't even make the tisni even in a machteshes ketana. Two more questions is still and says, well, Tanya, but wait a second. Another Brisa says, ain't kochim b'machteshes gedola, avol kochim b'machteshes ketana, that you are allowed to go and do it in a machteshes ketana. So that seems to be an incorrect understanding. You can't explain that this is one statement in the Brisa. So where it says, Taka, you're right, and we'll reinterpret this Brisa. Amar Baya Bai says, Kitanya nami masnisa, when this Brisa said that you're not allowed to do the tisni and ain't kochim b'machteshes, it means b'machteshes gedola tanya. It just means in a large machteshes, you're not allowed to go and do this. However, the tisni, you're not even allowed to do in a small machteshes. So when it says enos in tisni, it means in a small machteshes. And then it says ein kochin, the chilk and the daisa, that you're not allowed to do in a large machteshes, but you could do that in a small machteshes. So that's the way Abaya understands this brisa. We turn to the Amud Beis, Yudal and Amud Beis. Rav has a different understanding. Rav says, no, we could learn it the way we originally did. And in fact, we could be saying that you're not allowed to be pounding over here even in a machteshes kitana, even in a small machteshes. You're not allowed to go pound the grain. Lokashas, and what's the seeming contradiction over here between the first and second statement? It all depends where. Halon the haluhu. Rashi explains, first he says, halon, in a place where you're allowed to use the smaller utensil, that's when the leslon avdin mazazli. You're not dealing over here with servants that aren't careful and punctilious in their performance of mitzvos. And these servants will not do it properly. So if you're not dealing with these bad servants, Jewish servants, bad servants, but you're dealing with erlich ha'anis balabatim, so then they're not going to chop with the large one if you tell them you can't chop with the large one, but they'll only use the small one and they'll chop with the smaller one. That's halon, where you're allowed to go chop with the smaller one. However, haluhu, that's in a place, the islu abde mezazlin. You have these servants, Jewish servants, that are unfortunately bad, and they're going to lie. But osim begdola, they're going to make the chopping in a large type of a bowl and pestle because it's easy for them to do so. And then afterwards, they're going to say, omen, oh no, no, don't worry, biktana sino, we use the smaller one. So therefore, halon v'halu, it depends where. If you're dealing with a place where there are no servants of the mezalzel, so then you can use a smaller one. But if it's in a place where it has servants of the mezalzel, so then you can't even use a smaller one because of a fear that they're going to claim that they use a smaller one, they really use a larger one. Now, which one is Eretz Yisrael and which one is Babel? So Rashi doesn't exactly say, but Tosos and Dibra Maskel Rav Amar tells us that Livnei Eretz Yisrael, Sheish Lam Avodim, Shemezalzel Medover, that's the one in Eretz Yisrael, where there is a concern. But in Babel, where they weren't as well off, and they didn't have these servants, so therefore, in Babel, they would be allowed to go use the smaller mortar and pestle, but not in Eretz Yisrael. That's the understanding that Rashi has, as explained by Tosos. The Rambam has a different understanding. The Rambam says that the wheat in Eretz Yisrael is better, and it can be chopped on Erev Yontif without losing any of its taste. And therefore, they're not allowed to go and chop with a small mortar, because they could chop with the regular mortar on Erev Yontif, as opposed to in Bavel, where the wheat wasn't as good, so they allowed them to go chop with the smaller mortar. That's halon v'halu, according to the Rambam. And finally, you have the Ravid. The Ravid tells us that they didn't have daisa in Eretz Yisrael. Daisa requires very good chopping. So in Bavel, they ate a lot of daisa. So therefore, in Eretz Yisrael, where they didn't need the really heavy-duty chopping, they could use a small chopper. But in Bavel, where they had daisa, which required heavy-duty chopping, so they didn't let them use the small, because they would then go and chop the daisa in the larger one and say that they did it in the smaller one with stomach. Okay, these are all different explanations for what halon haluhu means. Gemara tells us, Rav Papi ikla levei mar Shmuel. Rav Papi came to visit the great mar Shmuel on Yontif, and isele daisa, they gave him daisa. As I just pointed out, in Bavel, they had daisa, so they gave him daisa. Now, he didn't want to eat it, v'lo'acha, because he was afraid that they may have chopped it on Yontif, when you weren't allowed to go chop it on Yontif, because it was a concern that they would chop it in a large chopper instead of the small chopper. So, and therefore, they made a rule, you can't use it at all. So Rav Papi said, I'm not going to have this from Mar Shmuel's house. So the Gemara says, the Duma Machteshes Ketana Avdu, maybe they made it in the small type of chopper, and therefore it would be allowed. So Rav Papi said, the Chazi Dehavid Dayik Tvei. Rav Papi saw that it was very, very finely ground, and there was no way that you would be able to be so finely ground in a small chopper. They must have used a large chopper. Gemara says, maybe they did it yesterday. Maybe they did Erev Yontif. So if they did Erev Yontif, then this is Hetu Gomer. So again, Rav Papi saw the Chazye, the Hava Kolif Tziharei. He saw that it was Kolif Tziharei. What is Kolif Tziharei? So Rashi explains, Tzohar Mar Iso. It was like shining. It was like a peeled type of white streak inside of it. And that indicated that it had just been pounded right there that very day. And it wasn't something from Erev Yontif. So therefore, Rav Papi said, no, thank you very, very much, but I'm not going to have this daisa. That's one teretz. The Abaye say, alternatively, he says, shiny be Mar Shmuel, that normally he would eat it. But he knew, unfortunately, that in the house of Mar Shmuel, the Ika Pritzusa the Avde, that there the servants were very Pritzifbich, they were very, very, unfortunately, not medaktik in the performance of mitzvos, and he was very concerned that they would, in fact, use the larger chopper instead of the smaller chopper, and therefore, Rav Papi said, no, thank you, I'm not going to partake of your daisa. Now, there's one huge problem over here. Mar Shmuel ate from this daisa. It was his house, it was his servants. How could he eat from this? If Rav Papi was concerned about it, why wasn't Shmuel concerned about it? This is a bomb kasha. Now, and Rashi tells us they don't seem to ask this kasha, but the Ritva asked this kasha. And he says, Mar Shmuel Atzmo, Hoya Gavra Rabba. This is the great Mar Shmuel. How did he have in his household avodim that would not be punctilious in the performance of mitzvahs? He should have fired them, or he should have taught them. And how come Rav Papi was concerned, but he wasn't concerned that they did something wrong? So obviously it has to be a teretz. So the Ritva says, Shmuel knew that they were erlicha avodim. They may have had immoral and inappropriate behaviors otherwise, but nizharu be'iser. But in regards to the kitchen, they were very, very careful. What they did outside the kitchen, that Shmuel, unfortunately, wasn't responsible for. But in his kitchen, it was glat kosher, and therefore, Shmuel knew that it was fine. But Rav Papi just saw them, they were acting inappropriately. So he assumed, it's just like they acted inappropriately outside the kitchen, Mestamba, Shmuel didn't watch them as carefully as he should have. And they acted that way in the kitchen, and that's why Rav Papi didn't eat it, but Shmuel ate it. And therefore, Rav Papi was machmir on himself, lifnei Meshuras HaDin. And he wasn't somech on the hashgach of Mar Shmuel. Why? Because Mar Shmuel himself, he said, maybe doesn't realize how bad they really are. The Shita Mekubetzes gives a different teretz. The Shita Mekubetzes says, Shelo somach Mar Shmuel b'zeh. Rav Papi didn't trust Mar Shmuel, not because he didn't trust his hashgacha, because halachically he wasn't allowed to, because he's an Eid Echad, is not Neman in this situation to be machshedem. I normally say Eid Echad is Neman b'Yisurim, so maybe they want to suggest that because this was a cheskas, that the Avadim were mezalzlin over here in Isser, and ain't Eid Echad Neman neged chazaka. There was a chazaka that these people were doing the incorrect behaviors outside the kitchen, so Mestama inside the kitchen too. And therefore, Rav Papi said, I'm sorry, in this situation, I don't think Eid Echad is Neman b'Isurim. So while Shmuel may have been absolutely convinced that they were good, Rav Papi couldn't rely upon that, according to the Shita Mekubetzes, and therefore, Rav Papi didn't eat, even though Shmuel did. Again, two great answers to a very, very good question. This brings us to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us, Haborer kitnios biyontiv, when you want to go and separate out the kitnios from the garbage, the waste, the psolis that they're originally coming with. So the laws of Borer on Shabbos are very, very clear. You need to fulfill three strict rules in order to be Borer on Shabbos. It has to be Ochel mitoch ha-psolis. You have to go and take the food from the waste. You can't take the waste from the food. So you always have to take the Ochel mitoch ha-psolis. It has to be miyad. It has to be immediately before you're going to eat it. You can't do it Friday night, for example, for Shabbos lunch. You have to do it Shabbos lunch right before Shabbos lunch. So it has to be miyad, immediately when you're going to use it. And it has to be lo b'kli. It can't be with a utensil. It has to be either by hand or with a type of an implement that is not the normal way to be borer with. So those three rules are for borer on Shabbos. The question is, do they apply on Yontif? So the Tanakama, Beishamai, says, if you're going to be borer kitnius on Yontif, yeah, all these rules apply. Beishamai omrim, borer ochel, you have to take the food from the psoles, and the Mepharshim bring down, you have to do it miyad immediately, and you have to do it with your hands and not with a utensil specifically made for separating, and then the ochel, then you're allowed to eat it. So those are the rules on Shabbos, those are the rules on Yontif, so says Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel disagrees. Or Beis Hillel Omrim, Beis Hillel says, Borer Kedarko. You can be Borer in the normal way you would on a weekday, which means, as we'll see in the Gemara, that sometimes it's easier to remove the stuff that you don't like from the stuff that you do like. And therefore, you could be Borer the Psoles under certain situations rather than being Borer the Ochel from the Psoles. That's what it means, Borer Kedarko. You can do it in the normal way that you would go and be Borer. So, for example, you have peas and carrots, and you don't like the peas, and there's only a small number of peas. It's easier to go and eat by taking out the peas and then eating the carrots rather than trying to remove all the carrots and then eating them, which would be the halacha on Shabbos. So, Beis Hillel's approach is borer kedarko. And when we say kedarko, it means you're even allowed to use various implements. You're allowed to use b'cheiko. You can put it in your lap and spread it out in your lap, let's say a towel or something, and the good stuff will go to one side and you shake it and the bad stuff goes to the other side. Or you take bekonon, a kli, that what we said previously was like a wide funnel on one end and it was narrow on the other end, and you'd pour in this ochel and psolis together, and the ochel was smaller, would go down and come out the other end, and the psolis, which is heavier and thicker, would stay at the top. So this type of a funnel is called a kanon. So you're allowed to use this as well, or petamchoy. Petamchoy is like a plate, Rashi said, a ka'ara. And again, you shake it out. It's similar to the cheiko. You'd be able to shake out the psolis from the ochel, and this is acceptable according to Beis Hillel. but you're not allowed to use a very, very finely specialized tool. Avolo b'tabla lo b'nofa v'lo b'kvara. We said this yesterday. You're not allowed to use these much more specialized types of straining implements, such as a very large plate, which would be much easier to separate a large amount of psolus from the ochel, or the napa and the kavra are various types of sieves that allow you to separate a much finer and larger amount of food, and therefore that would be looking too much like you're doing it for more than one meal and doing it for the future, and that you're not allowed to do. Finally, we get to the most makel opinion of Rabbi Gamliel. Is even more makel than Beis Hillel, Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Afmi Diach Vishola. You're even allowed to go and soak the item that you want to separate, the chaff from the good stuff, and in this way, you'll soak it, vishola, and then you'll be able to go and take off the good stuff from the top that will float up to the top, or, as Gemara will say, sometimes the good stuff sinks to the bottom, it's heavier, and the bad stuff comes to the top. Either way, you're allowed to take off the stuff that you don't want and be left with the good stuff. In any event, that is the lenient opinion of Rabban Gamliel. That's our Mishnah. Now we begin the Gemara. Tanya, the Gemara says, Amar Rabban Gamliel, b'med dvar mamurim, what do we say in the Mishnah? That Beis Hillel holds, borer kedarko, you're allowed to go and do it in the normal way, which could even mean taking the psolus from the ochel. That is only allowed, kisha ochel merub ala psolus. Like I said, you like the carrots, you don't like the peas. So you have 80% of it is carrots and 20% of it is peas. And instead of trying to pick out the carrots from the peas, just get rid of the 20% peas, and now you can eat the carrots to your heart's content. So when the ochel is merub ala psolus, then you're allowed to go pick out the psolus. Avo psolus merub ala ochel. Again, you have 80% peas, and you have only 20% carrots, and you don't like the peas, you want the carrots, then, there you call. The only way you're allowed to eat it is no telus ochel. You have to take the carrots out, because that's less tircha, that's less work for you. So the critical factor, according to Beis Hillel, is you have to do the one that's less work. More questions, this last statement. Psolus merub ala ochel. If you have 80% psolus and only 20% food, so then mi ikah man deshari. It's all muktza. The food is batel to the muktza psolus. So how are you allowed to eat it at all? So it says, no, lo tzricha. You know what we're talking about? The nafish betircha, vezuta bishura. No, we're dealing over here with you have less psolus than ochel. So let's say you have 60-40. You have 60% good and 40% bad. So in this situation, the 40% bad doesn't mavatel the 60% good. But if you wanted to take out the 60% good, that is going to be easier than taking out the 40% bad, because the nafish tircha, it would still be much more work to take out the 40% bad in this situation than the 60% good. So it's telling us over here that even though the psolus is actually a smaller shear, zuta bishura, but since the nafish betircha, you have to take out the ochel in this situation. It's only when the psolus is a smaller amount and it's easier to do, then you'll have to take out the psolus from the ochel. Otherwise, you have to take the ochel from the psolus. Then the Mishnah quotes Rabban Gamliel Omer, Af Mediach Vesholeh. He says you're allowed to go soak it, rinse it in water, and then the good and the bad will separate. Tanya, we learned in the Braisa, Amar Rabbi Elazar of Tzadok, Elazar of Tzadok said, Kachiyam in Hagan, Shal Beis Rabban Gamliel. This was the minhag that they did in Rabban Gamliel's house. Again, this is Rabban Gamliel and our Mishnah said, Mediach Vesholeh. So what do they do? Shal Mevilin Deli Mali Adashim. They would bring a bucket that was full of lentils, Adashim of lentils, and they'd fill it up with water. Umetzif and Olav Mayim. They'd pour water into it, and in this situation, Vinimtsa, Ochel lemata, upsolus lemala. The psolus would rise to the top. It was less heavy than the water. The lentils were heavy. They would go sink to the bottom. And this way you would separate out the psolus, which would float up on the top, and the ochel, which would stay at the bottom. Ayde Gemara says, what Tanya Ifcha, a Bryce says the other way, that they filled up the bucket with water, and the food would go to the top, and the psolus would go to the bottom. So Gemara says, it's not a steer between these two Bryces. It depends what you're dealing with. Lokasha. Ha Biafra. When you're dealing over here in the second Bryce, that you said that the food would rise to the top, that's when the psolus was heavy. Ha Biafra. The psolus was dirt. So the food is lighter than the dirt. So the dirt would sink to the bottom of the water, and the food would rise to the top. And Ha Begili. In the first Bryce, you're dealing over here with straw. Now, straw is very light. The straw would flow to the top, and the food would stay at the bottom. And therefore, in that situation, the psolus goes to the top, and you go and wipe it off. You take it off the top. You skim it off the top, and you're left with the ochel. That's Rabban Gamliel's Shita. Next Mishnah. Here we're going to be talking about, are you allowed to send manos, various types of presents, on yontif to somebody else? So Beishamay says, you're only allowed to do that. Beishamay yomrim, emishaltim biyontif ela manos. You're only allowed to send presents, portions that are something that they can use on yontif. It has to be something that is capable of being eaten or used on yontif. But it can't be something that's not ready to be used on yontif. That is the opinion of Beis Shammai. Elamonos, Rashi says, Dovor Hamuchon. You don't normally keep it till the next day. For example, chatichos basar chatuchos, chopped up meat already that you're going to give to archim or fish, l'chein dogim, so that you're allowed to send because they're going to use it that day and they're not going to save it for after yontif. Beisol disagrees. Beisol omrim, no. Mishalchin, you're allowed to send on yontif. Behema, chaya, v'ov. You're allowed to send any of these different types of animals that are all edible if they're shechted. And you're allowed to send them, bein chayim, bein shchutim, whether they're shechted or not. You're allowed to send them even if they're alive. If the person wants to shecht them, he can. And you certainly can send them when they're shchutim because he can eat them right then and there. Likewise, mishalchin yenos, you're allowed to send wine, or shmanim, oils, or slossos, flour, pekidnios, or beans. However, the one thing you can't send is tvua, avolo tvua. Beisilo says tvua isn't edible, and therefore you can't send grains on yontif. Rashi says, sheino ru'uya hayam, it's not able to be used on yontif. Why not? Shein tochanim biyontif, because you're not allowed to grind it up on yontif. Shayilu litchom yesu, that has to be ground erev yontif, below tofik taima, and it won't get ruined if you chop it up in erev yontif. It's perfectly edible and still good and potent on yontif, so therefore you must chop it up in erev yontif. And therefore, tvua wouldn't be able to be used, so even Beis Hillel says you can't send tvua. But all the other things, they're all capable of being used, and Beis Hillel allows them. Whereas Beis Shammai says it has to be used immediately, readily, and that's the difference between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Finally, we have Rabbi Shimon, even more makel. Rabbi Shimon mati b'tvua. He says even tvua can be used, Rashi explains, because shemo yavashle mikdera. Guess what? You could cook these grains, this tvua, directly in a pot. And then afterwards, v'yachatshem b'machteshes ketana. Then you can use a small machteshes and chop them up and make flour. So therefore, it is usable without really grinding it in an impermissible way. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon says you can even send tefuah. Gemara starts off and says, Tani Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya says, u'bivach lo yasenu b'shura. When you're sending these gifts, you can't send them with a big fanfare. As Rashi explains, lo yasenu b'shura is lo yishach yishalach hadoren ayde anoshim harbe. Don't send it with many people, because then the av shemilsa, it's a big tumult, and it looks like benirim kimolichin limkor bashuk. It looks like they're going to sell it in the marketplace, and that you're not allowed to do. So you're allowed to give an individual private present, but you can't go give him merchandise to go sell in his shuk, in his store. So that's what Rabbi Yechiel says in this brisa. Another brisa, Tana, Ein Shura Pechusa Mishlosh Bani Adam. The definition of public fanfare, this Av Shemilsa, is it has to be at least three people. If you have three people, and each of them is carrying three things, so therefore, that is considered a big fanfare. That's considered a Shura. By Ravashi, Ravashi asks, what about if you have three people, but they're not each carrying three things? Tlosa Gabra, yes, I have three people, Utlosa Mine, but each of them is only carrying one thing. So altogether, with the three people, I have three things being carried. But I would be halachically allowed to send Reuven with the first item, and send Shimon with the second item, and send Levi with the third item. That wouldn't be a problem. So if I sent them individually, it would be Het Gomer. Am I allowed to send them together, Ravashi asked. Is that considered Av Shemilsa because it's three people? Or do we say, no, it's only three items and it's not really Av Shemilsa? And the Gemara says, my, what's the answer? Teku. Don't have an answer. Finally, we discussed Rabbi Shimon's opinion from the Mishnah, the most makel opinion. Rabbi Shimon mati b'tvua. He said, you can even send tvua on yontif. Bryce says, Tanya, Rabbi Shimon mati b'tvua. The reason why Rabbi Shimon is mati b'tvua, because it can be used. For example, kagon chitin, when you send chitin, this tvua, lasus mihen ludios, you can make a certain type of a kedera. Rashi explains ludios as maichu chitin, a certain type of porridge, a certain type of grain dish. So it's edible on yontif, so therefore, of course, you can send it. Sorim, why would you send barley? Litel of lebehemto. Sorim are barley, are animal fodder. So therefore, you're allowed to feed your animals on yontif. You send the barley to feed his animals. And finally, adashim, why can you send lentils? Lasus men resisin. Rashi says resisin is a machala osim in adashim. It's some sort of a lentil dish. So he's going to make lentil soup. He's going to make lentils. And this is allowed because it's edible on yontif. That explains Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Next Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us, Mishalchin kelim, just like you're allowed to send food that can be used. So the opinion over here in our Mishnah is that you're allowed to send kelim, various types of, Rashi says, begodim, garments. The kelim here are garments. Bein tefurin, bein shein tefurin, whether they're sewn together or they're not sewn together. The Gemara will explain what is the value of something that's not sewn together. And the Mishnah goes further and says, Af b'sheish b'm kilayim, even if it's something that you're not allowed to wear because it's kilayim, nevertheless, you'd be allowed to send it on yontif, and again, the Gemara will explain this. As long as the overriding reason is, v'hein l'tzara chamod, as long as they can be used on yontif, you're allowed to send them on yontif. But the one thing you can send is avalo sandal hamasura. You're not allowed to send a spiked shoe, what I would call cleats. That's because of a maisha shahoy that the Gemara is going to tell us about, as Rashi alludes to over here. There's a famous story in the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Samach that Nebuch, the Jewish people, were being persecuted for a change by the Goyim, and they had to hide in these bell caves in Eretz Yisrael. And one time there was a Maisa that they made sure that nobody saw them entering or leaving. And they used to have like a dirt area there that had no footprints in it, so therefore everybody assumed that nobody entered or left. One time there was a mistake that occurred, and it caused a huge tumult, and they thought that the Romans were coming, and they stepped on each other in their tumult. There was a tremendous run for the money, and everybody left, and because they were in cleats, unfortunately some people died. So therefore they made a gzera, you can't wear cleats on Shabbos or Yontif. That's the sandal hamisumar. Velo minol sheino tofer. Likewise, you can't send a shoe that is not sewn together, because you can't wear such a shoe. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, aflo minol lovin. He says you can't even send a white shoe, because it needs to be blackened by the shoemaker. It needs to be polished. So you can't send a white shoe, because in those days they didn't just have shoe polish. It was something that was an artisan had to do. You couldn't do it yourself. Because you needed the artisan to go and make it. Zaklal, this is the rule the Mishnah tells us. Kosh neosimbo, Rashi explains neosimbo means miskachimbo. In other words, if you can use it, you get hanoah from it right away. So beyantif mishachimso. If you can use it on yantif, then you'll have to send it on yantif. We'll have to explain what it means zaklal. Normally zaklal always comes to include something else. We'll learn this in the Gemara. Mar starts off and says, Bishloma Tefurin, we can understand why you can send garments that are sewn together, because obviously, Chazul Amabush, you can wear them, no problem. And we can understand even, She'ain Tefurin, even if they're not sewn together, Nami, we can understand what use they would have, Chazul L'chasuye, you can use it as a cover, you use it as a blanket, you can cover yourself up with it, fine. So sewn or not sewn together, perfectly understandable. But what possible benefit? Ela kilayim lemay chazu. How can you send somebody kilayim on yontif? You're not allowed to wear kilayim. So how could you get benefit from it? Are you going to tell me v'chitema chazu lemeimach tusei? You're going to fold it up. Meimach tusei, Rashi says, means you're going to fold it up lichvol underneath you, and therefore you won't be wearing it. But that's not correct, because v'atanya, the Brisa says, lo yale alecha. You're not allowed to have any kilayim go upon you. And this is true. You're allowed to go midaraisa and have it underneath you because it's not folded over you. But the rabbis came along and made gzera. The rabbi said you can't even have it underneath you because shema tikarech lo nimo albasaro. Because guess what? Some of it's going to unfold and come up on your body and warm you up. And therefore, you are getting benefit from the kilayim even if it's underneath you. Are you going to tell me, so you won't have the kilayim directly underneath you, so there's no way they're going to come upon you? So the rabbis made gzeira as follows. Or alternately, Amar Rabbi Yossi ben Shol. Rabbi Yossi ben Shol said, in the name of Rabbi, Amar Rabbi, and Rabbi said it, Mishum Kahala Kadisha Bishalayim, who are the Kahala Kadisha Bishalayim, the holy community of Yushalayim. So the Gemara, the third paragraph, Daf Chav Zayin, tells us a similar story that Rabbi Yossi ben Shol said in the name of Rabbi, who said in the name of the Kahala Kadisha Yerushalayim, and the Marsha there says that this is a reference to Rabbi Shimon ben Asya and Rabbi Yossi ben Hamishulam. And the reason why they were known as the Kahala Kadisha Yerushalayim is because they would divide up their day into a third learning, a third davening, and a third parnosa. So that's why they were called the holy people of Yerushalayim. In any event, our Gemara tells us over here, afilu esa matzo zu agabizu, even if you have 10 blankets, one on top of the other, and the bottom one is kilayim, v'kilayim tachteyan, nevertheless, also lishon aleim, we don't allow you to go and sleep on the top one. Now, we have an argirsa, mishum shinemar lo yalo olecha, which is the pasuk that we just brought down before, that you're not allowed to have the kilayim come upon you and warm you up in any way, but on the side it says, leisa biyuma ubitomid, where this Gemara is found in the Gemara in Yuma, and in Tomid, it doesn't have those words, albeit they're correct, but it doesn't have those words, so they're not goris over here as well. Bottom line is, what benefit could you possibly get by giving somebody kilayim on yontif? You're not allowed to wear it, you're not allowed to put it underneath you, you can't even have it underneath you with 10 blankets on top of it. So Gemara says, you're right, it's not talking about a blanket or something you put underneath you, ela bevilo, it's talking about a curtain. And a curtain that is kilayim could be used, so therefore you're sending a curtain because you don't wear a curtain and therefore it's not going to warm you. That's also not true. Vamar Ula, Ula said no. Mipne ma amru vilon tome. Why is a vilon tome? The parochas in the Beis Hamikdash was capable of being kabel tumah. Tosis is a whole discussion. Says it's not really for the same reason as over here. In any event, a curtain can accept tumah. If it can accept tumah, it must be that it's a beged. So mipne shashamish mischamin kinegdo. Because sometimes the shamish is going to go and lean against it and warm himself up against it. So therefore, if this vilon is made out of kilayim, it could lead to a takola. So we can't be talking about sending a vilon. So again, what possible benefit could you get from sending kilayim garment or kilayim curtain on yontif? The person's not allowed to use it. So how can you send it? So we turn to Tezvav and Aleph, Ella b'kashin. You know what we're talking about here? Felt. We're talking about a very hard type of material. Rashi says begadim kashin. They're hard material. Shein mechanin. They won't warm a person up because they don't bend over the person and warm him up. Mutar leishev alehem. You can sit on such types of a cushion. For example, the chihad the amr Rav Huna b'reid Rav Yeshua, as Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yeshua, said, Hai namta gamda dinarish. This namta, Rashi says, is a beged that's called feltra, felt, that is gamda, that is very kosher. So this type of felt, hard felt, that comes from a place called dinarish, that's the name of a place, shaya, you're allowed to go and send on yonta because there is no potential that it will warm you up because it's a hard felt that won't bend and warm you up. Furthermore, Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa says similarly, Ardolayin, Rashi says, Reisi b'tshuvas agonim, that these are regilin lelovshon tachas min aleim. They would put them underneath their shoes, and the tolin aleim or shel tayoshim, they would put on it the hide of a tayish, a goat, that had been already started to be worked upon, and therefore they placed this keneged or ekev by the sole of the foot, and it was made out of tzemer and this wool, and they called it namti. This was also known as namti. So this ardelayim was a hard type of a material, and by mishum kalayim as well. No problem wearing it, similar to this felt that we had mentioned. Finally, let's get to the two dots. Omer Rabba, Rabba says, Hani tsare de pshite, a bag that has coins inside of it. Also, there is no concern if this bag is kilayim that you're going to warm yourself up with it, because that's not the normal way that a person uses such a bag. You don't get warm from such a bag. Rashi explains, this garment that you sew the money into is mutter lo seis b'cheiko. You can put it in your lap. Shehamos makashin oso, that the money inside of it hardens it. It won't serve to heat you up in any way. You won't get any benefit from the kilayim. However, the bizrani, Rashi explains, the bizrani is shetzara behem zroim. If you were to put seeds inside of such a bag, yesh b'mishum kilayim, that does warm you up, because also lo seis b'sol cheiko, because it's going to warm you up. However, Rav Ashi disagrees. Rav Ashi mar echazev echazev, both whether the bag with the money inside of it or the bag with the seeds inside of it, the zera inside of it, and by mishum kilayim, neither one is kilayim, because lafish ain derech chimum b'kach. It doesn't warm you up. It's not normal that you'll be warmed up from this, and therefore it is permissible. With this, we conclude today's shir. Again, I want to wish everybody a wonderful, good gebencht yar. It's Erev Rosh Hashanah when I'm dictating this, and Be'ezus Hashem, we should all daven well. And Be'ezus Hashem, all of us should get a wonderful decree from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and in that zechus, we should be able to be zocha to learn together for many, many cycles to come. Wonderful, good Geben Shor, Kesiva, Vachasima, Tova.